Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. Mike. Hello.
Lee. Hello.
We have yet another distinguished guest and someone we consider part of the family of fighting and exposing Scientology and their criminal activity. Tony Ortega, welcome.
Thank you for having me on, Leah. Mike.
Hi, Tony.
How are you?
It is absolutely our pleasure. Now, let's for those who don't know, Tony, let's go through a little bit of your history. Tony, you were not ever a Scientologist.
Never once.
And what got you involved in exposing Scientology?
You know, I was a new reporter for a newspaper in Arizona, of all places, and I was just looking for a good story. And I was fortunate. I worked for a weekly, and part of our job was to look for stories that the Daily had either missed or done badly.
Okay.
And I happened to be looking through the letters to the editor one day of the Arizona Republic, and I spotted a letter from a guy named Rick Ross, mm-hmm. who was complaining to the paper that they had covered his lawsuit and that he had lost a $5 million lawsuit, mm-hmm. but they had completely left out of the story that the plaintiff against him had been recruited by the Church of Scientology. And I thought, wow, that sounds juicy. How could the paper of record leave that out?
All right.
And so I reached out to him and found that there was this incredible story about Kendrick Moxon and the Church of Scientology recruiting this Christian kid to sue Rick Ross so they could really end up suing the Cult Awareness Network and end up taking it over. I mean, it's an incredible story, a 1990s Scientology story, but I got to sink my teeth into that. And I was fortunate enough that I worked for a publication that kind of encouraged you to develop an area of expertise. And so over the years, I just kept coming back and back to that subject. I just found it endlessly fascinating. But I'm just a reporter covering her story. I never was involved in it myself.
All right. But now so just a quick little stat rundown for you. You graduated Cal State Fullerton. You've worked for the Phoenix New Times. You worked for the New Times LA, Broward Palm Beach News Times, and the Village Voice.
So I had ended up the editor-in-chief of the Village Voice in New York, which is an amazing position to be in as a journalist. And I had written a lot about Scientology on the website, and it had gotten huge. You know, it was overnight, I was the most read blogger in the entire company. And, this was a very difficult time for newspapers. We were letting go people all the time. It was terrible. I hated doing it. And the guys that owned it were turning it over to their lieutenants. It was going to change hands. And when you're the editor in chief, you serve at the pleasure of, right? And when a regime change comes, you know that you're probably not going to survive it. And I knew that the new owners didn't think about me the same way the previous owners did. So I got out of there when I could.
Right.
I left at that point because I knew it was changing. And I went to go write my book about Paulette. So I left, and a week later, they announced the ownership change that until then had been secret. I was one of the few people that knew about it.
Right. And just to let everybody know that Tony started his blog after leaving the Village Voice called The Underground Bunker. You wrote the book. You just mentioned the book that you wrote, which is amazing. It's a story about Paulette Cooper, who was a journalist in New York and has probably one of the most egregious fair game stories that we've ever experienced.
And you've had her on The Aftermath. You had her on the podcast. I mean, she's an amazing figure. And I just, Janet Reitman had written her book and Lawrence Wright was writing his book.
Yeah.
I just wanted to find something that was more narrative based. I wanted to find a story about Scientology that was a story.
Right.
And my publisher gave me the best advice. He said, write it as if it's happening.
Right.
So when you read my book, The Unbreakable Lovely, about Paulette Cooper, it reads more like a business thriller than a history. You know what I'm saying? Right. So that's the way I tried to do it. And I think people enjoyed it. And, So that was the timing on that. I left The Voice. I spent a couple of years writing that story. I had started up my own website, TonyOrtega.org, The Underground Bunker.
Yeah.
And just a year after I left The Voice is when I got to break one of my biggest stories of all time, And that is that Leah Remini had left the Church of Scientology.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. July 8th or something, July 5th, something, 2013, I got to break the story that you had left Scientology, and I got to tell the story about the wedding in Italy and all that stuff.
Right.
So, no, that was a huge thrill for me to be able to break that story. It was such an important one.
So how long have you been writing about Scientology abuses?
I just passed 25 years.
Which is fascinating because, again, I have to reiterate, Tony is and was never in Scientology. And you are one of the few who continues to expose Scientology. I mean, I know we all tweet about that. Like, hey, where's the LA Times? Hey, where's the New York Times? Where's anybody other than Tony and Yashar and Marlo Stern? Like, I don't know who else is really writing about.
Well, one thing I had noticed was, you know, as I was learning the history, and I, of course, had such huge admiration, not just for Paulette and what she had written, but people like Joel Sapel and Robert Welkos at the LA Times and, you know, people at the Washington Post. And but what I noticed was, and Richard Bahar, for example, who you've had on.
Yes. But you're right. Listen, I don't want to not mention the people. There are people, the Tampa Bay Times. It was Joe Childs. Right. And
what I noticed was that they would do some huge thing,
and then,
like, we're all totally indebted to Tom and Joe for the Truth Rundown.
Yes,
but then it would kind of die off. And right. what I realized there was a niche that I felt that I could fill, and that was that daily drumbeat. So that, like, not every day at the bunker is a huge important story, but we're keeping an eye on them day in and day out. So that people won't forget about disconnection, about tax exempt status, about all these things. And I felt like that was something I could do. And I just really enjoy it. I still feel like I got a front row seat to an amazing story that's going on.
Yes.
Well, and I think also, Tony, you've provided an archive and a place, an easy place for people to go to search about any topic related to Scientology. I mean, there is a story on the bunker about anything and everything, from what is Dianetics and clearing to what happened with the tax exempt status to what is going on with the legal cases to personal stories of people's involvement and how their lives have been destroyed. It, like, everything is there. And when I'm looking for something about Scientology, rather than just doing a straight Google search, I usually go to your website and search on your website first and look to see, okay, where's Tony's article about this? Because it's always got links to any other information. It's like an invaluable repository of the history and dirty laundry of Scientology.
I don't disagree. And once again, I'm not talking about people who have amazing websites like Jeffrey Augustine with the Scientology Money Project and Chris Shelton. But I'm talking about non-Scientology, you know, not former Scientology, not even connected to Scientology in any familial way, just straight up journalist talking about Scientology abuses. So I just want to be clear, because I don't want to discredit the amazing work that people do, because, like, you have an amazing blog as well, but we're not talking about it. We're talking about journalists who have never been in Scientology.
Right.
And they are far and few between. So you've been covering Scientology. You were also in Going Clear, Tony. And you have been systematically and consistently fair-gamed by Scientology and Scientologists.
Yeah, you had me on The Aftermath and asked me about that. And that's when I said for the first time publicly that they had targeted my wife with an elaborate scheme where they hired an out-of-work journalist to pretend that he was working on a story about her in order to freak out her employers.
So why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, you know, fortunately, her employers understood. You know, one of the advantages we have is that people know about Scientology, and they know that Scientology's full of it.
Right.
So once we made them aware this is a Scientology plot, they understood. And then, you know, it's I want to say it's funny. It's not really that funny, but
no.
Three years later, they tried the exact same scheme. The exact same scheme.
So what's the scheme? What's the scheme, Tony? Tell me
the
scheme.
They have somebody pretend that he's a reporter writing something about my wife and accusing her of being a terrorist. And
so how do they do this? They go to her employer, they contact her via telephone,
they send an email saying, I'm working on a story and we need a quote from you about why you would hire a terrorist. And the reason why they call her a terrorist is that she, you know, back during the anonymous days in 2008, 2009, they had some really fun online boards where people went and talked about Scientology and Anonymous. And she was one of many thousands of people that, you know, told jokes about Scientology at the Anonymous boards.
Okay.
And so they consider her a terrorist. So they send an email to her employer saying, do you realize, you know, we're working on a story on the fact that you hired a terrorist.
Well, hang on, Tony. Let me just clarify one thing. They don't consider her a terrorist. I mean, they don't give a fuck. They only care.
They're just trying to freak them out. They're just trying to freak out.
They don't actually believe that. They don't actually believe
that. Yes. In order to harm me.
Yeah.
And but what I found funny was 3 years later, they tried the exact same ploy with a different person. And this time her bosses were laughing. They're like, if it didn't work the last time, why are they trying it again? I said, well, that's Scientology.
And so the intent of this is what? Because they're not journalists. They work for a Scientology front group magazine, and they just simply can say that they're journalists, which they are not. They did this in my mother's restaurant. They showed up with a business card that said journalist on it. For I think it was Freedom Media Magazine, or which is a Scientology publication that is just dedicated to putting out slander and lies about people speaking up and out about Scientology. And literally went up to my sister and said, you know, we're doing a story on Leah Remini. And she's like, oh, are you? You're doing a story about Leah Remini? Yes, we're doing a story about Leah Remini. And she's like, oh, okay. So here's my card. You know, are you willing to talk about her? You know, she goes, what's the story about? We're vetting her book, Troublemaker. We're vetting her book. And she said, oh, okay, because the book's been out for like 5 years. I just, And my sister asked some follow-up questions for which the woman just kind of started to back out of the diner. But Mike, what is the purpose of something like this? Like, let's say Shannon was my boss.
The purpose is to cost you your job.
So that,
is exactly what the directive from Hubbard says, that you can always cost them their job.
And so just the planting the seed that maybe I was not factual in my book. I mean, everybody who's written a book knows you ain't saying shit in a book that's not vetted up and down a million fucking times. But anyway, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, and the idea, and you know, I've shown these things a number of times. There are two particular references from Hubbard where he talks about, you call up, you know, he gives these examples of Gosh Porge, and call up the thing and say that, you know, the prostitute is demanding her payment. And that creates in the mind of someone, oh, there must be something to this. Where there's smoke, there's fire. They've done the same things to me numerous times. They go knock on your next door neighbor's door and say, we're conducting an investigation. Hi, I'm a private investigator, and I'm conducting an investigation into Mike Rinder. Are you aware that he is engaged in mortgage fraud? Are you aware that he has been accused of smuggling drugs? And it's complete bullshit, but the person gets in their mind the idea, there must be something bad about this person, because why would anybody show up if that wasn't the case?
Right.
And I remember when this first came up with Tony's wife, and I actually wrote a letter to her boss that detailed and gave the exact, here is exactly how they do this. Right. This is what is happening. And here is, and how do I know this? Because this is what I used to be in charge of in Scientology. Right. And because Tony Ortega is such a thorn in the side of Scientology, and they can't get him, they're trying to get his wife. And right. that also is pursuant to the Hubbard dictate of you go after what the person is seeking to protect.
Right.
And every man who is, who can call himself a man seeks to protect his wife and children and family. There is no question that that's the job of a man is to protect his wife and children. Mm-hmm. So that's a very common target for when you're trying to do one of those things.
As well, women, Mike. We, yes.
I'm just saying, why go after Tony's wife?
Sure. That's all. Well, because it's going after
wife.
Yeah, but it's also going after just really Tony, and going after anybody who's connected to Tony will eventually take Tony out. If you can, Mike, if you could, will you post all this on the website?
Yeah,
you
know? I do it every time we talk about this. I put them on the. Great. You know, fairgamepodcast.com website that accompanies each episode, and on my blog. And, you know, I keep putting these things out because they are so incredible.
Yes.
I don't think people still, or many people still, actually understand that these things are mandates. These are what Scientology is required to do. Frame people. Literally. It says frame them.
I think because people come from the thought, you know, like real people who have real faith, right? You don't have to exactly follow to the T, you know, the scripture of your religion, right? Where because Scientology isn't a religion, it's a business for profit pretending to be a cult, not even a religion, because it really is a business for profit. Because it conducts itself as a business. It has Mike, I did a podcast of someone's the other day, and I said, you know, so the price list of Scientology, you know, there's a price list, you have to prepay, but wait, what? And he was well-versed in Scientology. And, you know, as far as he can be not being a Scientologist, right? I said, baby, please tell me you know that there's a fucking price list. Like, you can just Google it. I said, as a matter of fact, please do it now. Please do it now as we're talking, because I cannot take this anymore. Scientology has a price list, everybody. You can Google it and see it. It is not a faith-based religion. It is a business for profit. Sorry.
Well, it is faith-based, though.
Mike.
I just want to make a distinction here, Leah.
Really, Mike? Let me ask you that. Mike, really?
The faith,
Mike?
Is faith in L. Ron Hubbard.
No.
That
Mike,
is
Mike,
what
Mike,
Scientology
Mike,
is based
Mike, I'm
going
to fight you. Sorry, Tony, that you have to be involved in this family feud, but this is what being family is all about, Tony, and you're part of the family. So hold on, mommy and daddy are fighting. Or as I refer to us, grandma and grandpa. Okay, come on, Grandpa, I'm going to fight for a second. Mike, have you ever been in a Scientology course room where you are sitting reading a Scientology policy while the police officers are standing behind you making sure that you don't yawn, don't itch, don't move in your chair, and if you do, you are forced to go into another room by the Scientology police officer called a supervisor, and they then start to ask you what every definition of the word the is, or what's the definition of A, what's the derivation of A, how is the word A being used here, how's there being used? And then after they do that, Mike, you say, I don't particularly agree that all children... In Dianetics, I don't really think that I subscribe to this idea that a child of 7 years old should not be reacting to being passionately kissed by a grown up. And if they react in any way upset, that child, there's something wrong with that child. Now, if you say you don't agree with that,
yep,
what happens? You're allowed to believe that, Mike, and not allowed to believe it. You're allowed to not believe Scientology teaching.
No, that's what I'm saying. You have to. It is entirely a matter of you have faith that every word of L. Ron Hubbard is true. And that is the distinction of what makes a Scientologist. You have to believe every word of L. Ron Hubbard is true.
I just don't believe that it's faith when it's... No, because there's no repercussions. If I go into a Catholic church or a synagogue and I say, I don't particularly believe this. What, Tony? You're laughing. But what... Tony, be the tiebreaker here.
Definition of faith.
This is exactly the kind of argument I try never to get into at the bunker.
No, because if you are raised with the first,
you're using faith as a broad term, meaning a real religious belief. I am being funny and saying,
right?
Yeah, Scientology says there's no faith in Scientology, and I'm saying that's actually not true because you have to believe every single word of L. Ron Hubbard.
But I just don't know of any religion other than extremist cults and other types of extremist thinking that is actually considered, you know, what I know to be faith, which is, you know, having faith in something. You can choose to believe something, choose not, still call yourself Jewish, still call yourself Catholic. No one's showing up to your house, Mike.
But that's what I'm saying. That's a broad definition of the term faith, meaning a religious belief or religious commitment.
Point out one of the more intriguing things about Scientology is that its adherents will swear to you up and down that you're not asked to believe anything. It's a scientific pursuit.
Sure.
Hubbard said it was science, and he didn't want you to believe anything. You just have to go through it and learn the science, and then once they've been going through this science long enough, they're removing invisible entities from themselves with the use of a quasi-lie detector for $800 an hour.
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing that people that will put up with that will claim to you that they aren't asked to believe anything.
Oh, I know. So, right. And Tony, the thing is, too, is if I was a Scientologist and I would tell my mother, I don't particularly agree or believe in these upper confidential levels of Scientology, my mother would 1984 me. She would send a written report to Scientology. Then they would call me in. They would interrogate me in a locked room. They would say, what are you looking at on the internet? Who are you talking to that's anti-Scientology? And if I just said, look, I just don't believe that we're made up of spiritual beings that are talking to me or, you know, pretending to be cancer. I just don't believe, I don't think that's true. I just choose not to believe that. Just as, and you get punished for that, you have to believe it or you are punished for it. Not only are you punished for it, then your whole family is punished for it, pulled into Scientology at the cost of us, by the way, $3,000 minimum to interrogate me. And unless I say, okay, I believe this, that will I ever get out of the interrogation? I have to believe there's no way for me to get out. And so if I want to get out and say, well, fuck it, I'm out, then my whole family is leaving me. I'm being shunned by everything I've ever known. I'm having to admit that I was wrong. I no longer have my community that I was raised. You know, there's a lot of repercussions. I just don't know of any real faith that the repercussions are so great.
Of course. I think that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You can't define Scientology as a faith in the same way that you define Catholicism or Judaism or whatever as a faith.
Right.
But the lie that you don't have, that you don't believe anything in Scientology, that it is all science. And just as Tony said, you are not asked to believe anything. That's utter horseshit. There is way more belief or faith in L. Ron Hubbard in Scientology than there is in the Bible in Christianity or the Torah or whatever in any other religion. So that was the point I was making. Scientology is not a faith. But it requires more faith than any faith that you know of.
Okay, I disagree with the word, so I'm not even going to agree with you, Mike. But Mike... the real point of this was because you are forced into submission with Scientology teachings, we were talking about the policies of Scientology. And so this is the part I think that we could all agree on, that people don't really understand that there's no assimilating information from Scientology. The policy of L. Ron Hubbard has to be followed to a T. You cannot kind of think it says this, kind of think it says that. There's policy of L. Ron Hubbard that says policy is to be followed and my policies should never change, period. And so because of that, this is why fair game and fair game directives will continue to be in existence and will continue to be used by Scientology and Scientologists, because they follow the scripture, the policy of L. Ron Hubbard to a T. That is part of the agreements of Scientology. We all agree that we will adhere to Scientology policy at all times, exactly how it's written.
And because of that, they mm-hmm. spend incredible amounts of money
tax-exempt
smearing
money.
You, Leah, mm-hmm. smearing you, Mike, and smearing me. I mean, it's constant online. They send people around the world. I've had private investigators trying to intimidate my loved ones in both hemispheres, mm-hmm. On four different continents. I mean, it's insane the amount of money they will spend hoping that they will frighten you out of saying anything else about the Church of Scientology.
That's exactly what it is. Shutting them into silence.
On top of all of this, Mike, you and Tony were victims of Scientology hacking. They actually yeah. hacked your emails.
Tried to.
Oh, right. But right. What was the guy's name, Mike? Tony?
Eric Saldarriaga, who was being employed by Dave LeBeau.
And who's Dave LeBeau?
Dave LeBeau is the notorious private investigator who was the protege of the original notorious Scientology private investigator, Gene Ingram. And Dave LeBeau was the person who was originally the guy who went after Bob Minton at my direction, and then was the guy that went after me and Marty Rathbun and Tony at whoever took over from me's direction.
LeBeau showed up at my mother's house twice.
Saying what? Doing what?
To just intimidate her, to frighten her.
We're doing an investigation into allegations that Tony Ortega is involved in child sex trafficking. Wow. I guarantee you that's exactly what he said.
And your mom, Tony, your mom does it. She's not involved in any of this, right?
She's tough.
Okay, good.
I mean, the whole point is they show up, they want to ask questions, and it just gets everybody nervous. I mean, they want is that feeling in the pit of your stomach that somebody's at my mother's door on the other side of the country, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Right.
LeBeau is also the guy who ran the Squirrel Busters.
Wow.
That is a big bottle of water.
Mike, I have to drink two of these a day, I'm told.
Oh.
I don't like water. I just don't like water in general.
Tea.
Yeah, I have coffee here. But this is like torture to me to have to drink two of these a day. Literally, it's like,
oh, you've got Dave's brand of water, Leah.
First of all, so fucked up, you know, because I saw it at Tom Cruise's house, right? And you know, you ask for water, and this is what you get. I drink the water, and again, not a big fan of, like, I just don't like drinking water because it makes me pee every 2 seconds. So I drink the water and I go, fucking hell, this is some fancy water. This is the way the real celebrities do it, you know? So then I go, let me see if I could find this water. So I find the water, and then I have like my regular shit water, you know, bottled water. And I'm like, oh my God, there is a difference between the taste of these waters. Now, I even have had taste tests in my house where people go, you're absolutely crazy, Leah. You know, water's water. Oh, and I'm like, true. I will fight you. Seriously, fight you on this point. I'm going to put out Dixie cups of water and you tell me which one tastes better. And it's always this water.
I know.
And out of my
New York City drinking water.
Well, no, that's different. Okay, so that's unfair. That's unfair, Tony, because I live on the West Coast. And you're not.
I know, I'm from Los Angeles. I know how bad the tap water is.
You cannot drink the tap water here.
Horrible.
I am forced to spend money on this fancy Tom Cruise water.
I still remember my first day in New York.
Yeah.
As an 18-year-old in 1981, turning on the tap for the first time.
Yeah.
And realizing how cold and crystal crisp and wonderful it tastes.
Crisp.
I was shocked.
It is a shocking moment when you could literally drink out of the tap. It's very liberating. Anyway, yes. Sorry. And I reluctantly am still drinking this water. I'm ashamed of myself, Mike. Ashamed of myself.
Thank you.
All right. So, Tony, so you guys, so end off on the, we ended off on the fact that this man died. Did you want to add anything to that? Because it just kind of fizzled out because I was coughing.
Well, I just remember what an interesting moment it was when the U.S. attorney had revealed to me that I was the victim in a case.
Yeah.
And then, I was talking to Mike Rinder and realized he was a victim in the same case.
Wow.
That was an odd day.
Yeah.
It like, was.
Wow. Yeah.
And at that point, we both realized, oh, now we know who the real criminal is. Who's going to want to hack Tony Ortega and Mike Rinder? There's really only one organization that would do that.
Right. So. But you guys were never able to, with the help of the FBI, take it further. I mean, was this person ever, did he ever say I was hired by the Church of Scientology, or did he ever admit to any?
The judge revealed that in his chambers and the New York Times reported it.
Okay.
But like I said, I think because it was so incidental that they had caught this guy in a larger investigation of something else they were more interested in, they didn't spend the time following this where it could go. And wasn't it, Mike, that they wanted Saldarriaga to do a recorded call and they kind of blew it or something and LeBeau
he couldn't pull it off.
He couldn't pull it off.
And LeBeau was smarter than Eric Saldarriaga. And because the FBI were having Eric Saldarriaga speak to the people who had hired him to try and expand this, because they knew he was really a patsy. Right. He was just the guy that did the grunt work,
but
who hired him was who they were most interested in, and he couldn't pull it off, apparently. So it just sort of fizzled. But the good thing about that was the end of Dave LeBeau. He has not been seen since then. In fact, his brother wrote to me.
And he said,
said, I know what my brother has been up to. He is a rotten piece of shit and I can't even find him anymore. I don't know where he is. He's gone to ground. And I just want to let you know that nobody in our family agrees with what he has done.
And well, that's lovely that he reached out to you and has an opinion about the dirty work that his brother has been engaged in most of his life. But what is interesting to me is how somebody just kind of disappears and why.
Oh, I mean, I know.
I understand
exactly
it when it comes to missing, you know, the missing wife of David Miscavige or any Scientology employee that was a witness to, you know, a rape or, you know, children being molested inside. That makes total sense to me. But why would this guy just kind of disappear from his own family? He's not a Scientologist, is he?
Yes.
Oh, he was. Oh, okay.
He became one.
He became
one as a PI.
He testified. Wow. He submitted a declaration in the Rathbun lawsuit that he was a Scientologist. And the reason why he was running the Squirrel Buster operation was that he was personally offended that Marty Rathbun was harming his religion. Mm. Of course, I think Mike took it about as seriously as I did. I mean, the idea that Dave LeBeau was motivated out of, you know, religious
standing fervor. Up for his religious beliefs.
Yeah, I mean,
come on. Right. And so
listen,
Mike,
the truth of the matter is, Leah, if any of these PIs, if they get wind that the FBI is after them and is trying to snare them in some wider investigation, they panic. Scientology panics. My bet would be that Dave LeBeau is down in Cabo San Lucas with Gene Ingram. That's where he came from. He was Gene Ingram's mechanic on Gene Ingram's four-wheel drive rental agency in Cabo San Lucas.
I see. So because we have told these stories before, and people, Mike, you were part of OSA, so you know the thing to do with people that you think will be subpoenaed would be to ship them out of the country and basically finance their lives to just kind of live freely and happily with Scientology's tax-exempt money so that they could avoid any kind of responsibility.
Correct. Yeah, in fact, that's where we sent Ronnie Miscavige and his wife, Biddy, was to Cabo San Lucas, when the fear was that they were going to be subpoenaed in the McPherson
Lisa McPherson trial, right.
The death of the woman in Florida.
Sure. Now, if you know Sea Org members, the people who run Scientology, they very rarely leave their posts. Like, I have seen, I have grown up with the same people that I have seen at Celebrity Center my whole Scientology career. They either move to a different job, but they are still within the same organization unless they are in trouble. But they always come back. Like, they get reprimanded for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, and then you're not supposed to ask, like, hey, were you, like, forced to lick toilet bowl? You're not allowed to ask Sea Org members where they've been. But they always come back. That's the motto of the Sea Org, by the way. We come back. But they mean in a different way. They mean lifetimes. Anyway, this person just so happens to have gone missing the same time the LAPD knocked on Celebrity Center's door asking to talk to this person. She's all of a sudden out of the country.
Yeah.
Shocking, isn't it?
No.
No. And by the way, we told them, we actually did say, hey, guys, if you could just listen to us, we're just going to give you just a few sentences of advice. Don't go knocking. Because the next thing that's going to happen is that person's going to be shipped out of the country. And of course, just like the lawyers involved in every Scientology case, including the Danny Masterson idiot fucking lawyers, they know everything, including the police and the FBI. They, ma'am, please don't tell us our job. Okay. Just gonna tell you, we just know how Scientology works, but if you think you know, I went to law school. Right, yeah, but you don't know Scientology. We know better, thank you. Okay, what happens? Not 48 hours later, out of the country. Let's talk about the Danny Masterson case, because you, of course, are following it and have been following it, and the cases that are Valerie's case, Valerie Haney's case, if you want to talk about that.
Well, one of the things I've tried to do, and I think Mike and you and I have all had some success in this. I knew this was going to happen. When Danny was finally charged, places like the LA Times had full stories about the fact that he was facing 45 years to life in prison for raping three women. And other details, but what word was left out of their story? And this is what I have been trying to educate people. You cannot write about the Danny Masterson situation without considering Scientology. Because not only is Danny Masterson a lifelong Scientologist, the three women he is accused of raping were Scientologists at the time. And as much as he complains about the amount of time that's happened, it's gone by since these incidents happened, the reason why so much time has gone by is the Church of Scientology's interference in these cases. So you really can't write about this situation without deeply considering Scientology's role in all this. And I think over the last year, I have seen news organizations do a better and better job understanding that. Mm-hmm. I think that's thanks to, you know, the three of us and other people, you know, trying to educate them about, because these are complicated, very complicated cases. And I feel for these reporters that are coming to it new and trying to put this together. But they need to keep that in mind, that all three of these women were Scientologists at the time. They were blocked from going to the police initially because of Scientology. Scientology's up to its neck in this thing. And they, you know, they're not, they're less involved in the criminal case, because the criminal prosecutor's job is simply to prove that Danny Masterson raped these three women, and then he's going to face a long prison stay. So the prosecutor may not bring up too much Scientology in that particular case. But these women also sued Danny and the Church of Scientology because of the harassment they've been through. So it's really important that people keep that in mind. But yeah, you brought it up first. Those, you know, the way the civil lawsuit's been handled has been pretty disappointing.
And yeah, we're not talking about the criminal case. We're talking about the civil cases, guys.
The criminal case has been
handled
very, very well. And Danny's in big trouble. But the civil lawsuit has been just one set of mistakes after another. And all three of the big lawsuits they filed are now, they're all in terrible state.
Right. So far, what was recently was, what's the name of the judge? Kleinfeld?
Stephen Kleinfeld.
Kleinfeld. Okay. I don't know. Now, can we just change the word? Because if we keep promoting the fact that this is a under any circumstances an arbitration, it isn't. There is no such thing, everybody. And again, you know, I have an eighth grade education because I was in a cult that didn't allow me to get an education. But I mean, common sense. We just have to apply some common sense. There is no such thing as a Scientology arbitration. There just is no such thing. Why a judge can't simply say, well, let me see it. Well, because I'm not allowed to look at anything having to do with religion. But yet you found four the people who committed the crimes and allowing her or forcing them to do something that is a religious practice in Scientology. It is not secular. This is a Scientology justice action taken. It says it right there, everybody. If you can we, Mike, would you post what COMEVs are?
Yeah, I will post the articles that I have written about this bullshit arbitration thing.
Okay, and because it's called, know, everybody,
committee
it's called
evidence.
Yeah, it's called a committee of evidence. Okay, and it says even I'm just paraphrasing. Don't take my word for it verbatim, but it says this is a justice action taken against Scientologists. That's the part that really baffles me. Why can't you simply ask the Scientology lawyer, let me see the arbitration, that it actually exists? Am I crazy? Yeah.
No, unfortunately, that did happen in the Garcia case. And, but, you know, we can get into a lot of...
But that's different.
Well, it's not that different.
Mike, you're talking about a people who are taking, who are bringing Scientology to court because they have been abused, they have been hurt, they have been raped. And you are saying you now need to sit in a room with your accuser, with the person who committed these crimes against you, who are going into this committee of evidence, this pretended arbitration, and who believe that you should be destroyed by the very policies that you believe in, says that you should be eradicated from the face of this earth for reporting your crime to the police. You Scientologists believe that you should be eradicated from the planet. And you believe that this is what these women should be subjected to? Like, what? Can you explain the other side to me, anybody, so that I can maybe see the other side of this?
There is no other side. I mean, I remember when the Garcia case was going on, and Mike provided testimony saying that, look, I was there when they created these contracts. The whole point of creating these contracts was to create this trap for people.
Right.
And so even though you have this former executive explaining how this was all meant with the most cynical and evil purposes to destroy people,
Yeah.
These judges still always say, well, yeah, but they're a church and I can't examine their internal rules. And it's just amazing the way Scientology.
Well, because the committee of evidence would require that the defendants return to Scientology.
I mean, there is case law. I mean, we've seen this brought up. There's actually a famous case involving Hooters of all places,
mm-hmm.
where Hooters said the same thing. If you're going to sue us, you have to go to arbitration instead. And then Hooters got to choose the arbitrator. Mm-hmm. And there's case law where the judges said, no. You know, okay, if you can require arbitration, you can deny somebody their day in court. Mm-hmm. But once that decision is made, it mm-hmm. has to be an independent arbitrator, an arbitrator who could find for either side. And what I don't understand is with that case law on the books, a judge can't look at Scientology and say, okay, these people might be unhappy that they're not going to get their day in court and they're going to have to go through the arbitration, but at least it'll be an independent arbitrator
who
could possibly find for them. But instead, they're not. They're Scientologists in good standing mm-hmm. who are required by policy to think of these women as evil, suppressive persons.
Right. And to not even hear them. Like, they're not allowed to even talk to them. If they were to talk, Scientologists would literally cover their ears going, it is that insane. It's that insane.
And Scientology has done a great job of convincing courts that there is such a thing as a religious arbitration.
Right.
And I wrote an article on my blog where I said, look, a committee of evidence being called religious arbitration is mm-hmm. like the Spanish Inquisition being called religious education.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference.
Right.
You can't tell me that a court could not look behind this terminology of calling the Inquisition religious education and say, wait a minute, there's something really wrong here. This is no education. This is torture.
Right.
And actually, Scientology religious arbitration is also torture. It is subjecting people to a religious ritual, which Scientologists hate.
Right.
They hate being an interested party in a committee of evidence. It's like the worst thing that can happen to you. Now, imagine if you are no longer a Scientologist and having to submit to that bullshit. It's insane.
But what can we do at this point, Mike? What can we do, Tony?
Keep shouting.
I think that...
appeal.
The Garcias did go through an arbitration. They didn't want to, but they went through it. I really give them credit because they knew the only way they could appeal the judge's ruling was by first going through the arbitration.
Sure.
So they went through it, and it was as much of a farce as you can imagine. You can't have an attorney. They can't have a recording. They don't give you a transcript. They weren't even able to submit the evidence they wanted to submit. It was a complete joke. But they went through it, so then the judge accepted it.
Okay.
Then they could appeal the judge's decision.
So what happened?
And I think they put together a dynamite appeal they brought up all of these issues that we're talking about.
Right.
The unfairness with the religious, why should an ex-member of the church have to go through the church's, you know, religious ritual, whatever. Mm. I think they put together a great appeal. That's wonderful. It's more than 2 years now and the appellate court hasn't given us a ruling.
Right.
I mean, it's just incredible American justice.
And you know what? Yep. The other thing that bothers me, guys, is, by the way, it's a committee of evidence, Mike, just to bring up the point that you brought up. It is like having the scarlet letter, because if you are in Scientology and you find out that somebody is under COMEV, it is a justice action. It is like a court martial, just everybody knows. It is not an arbitration. It is a justice action. And if you literally, like, if I knew Mike, I saw Mike in the cafe of Scientology, and I was like, hey, no, Mike. And he was like, oh, I'm under comment. I'd be like, bye. Like, I wouldn't even want to be talking to Mike, because a comment in Scientology means you are bad. You've done something really bad. You've done some shit. And this is like the final... this is a point before you're about to get kicked out is a committee of evidence. Right, Mike, would you say?
And yeah, absolutely mm-hmm. right. And you also have to understand, it's not really like a court martial because you never get found not guilty.
Sure. Okay. You're absolutely right. This is the
other thing about it is once a committee of evidence is convened on you, basically, it's because
you have been
some
found guilty.
Boss around has already determined that you are guilty of something and they want other people to pass the sentence on you. Like so it's a way of avoiding having to be the bad guy all the time by palming it off onto someone else. You can ask 1,000 former Scientologists who've ever had a COMEV and say, what was your experience? And every single one of them will tell you if they've had a COMEV. Well, I walked in there and I was assumed to be guilty. It didn't matter what I said. And even after I explained everything and laid it all out and whatever, the findings found me guilty.
Right.
And the penalties that were and I had someone write to me and said, yeah, well, I was found not guilty. Like I had a committee of evidence that found me not guilty of certain charges and still gave me the penalties that were required had I been found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, what's the point? It's a sham.
But look, even as ridiculous as this committee of evidence is and the arbitration is, what's really going on here? Scientology has found a way to make itself lawsuit proof.
Sure.
Yep.
They've found a way to make it almost impossible for a former Scientologist to sue them.
And correct.
It's just amazing that the courts are letting them get away with it.
Yep. Well, I could only assume it's just because I don't know. Listen, people ask us all the time, like, what can we do? What can we do? You know, I'm shocked that there's no victims, advocate groups, First Amendment people. I mean, where is everybody for the victims of Scientology? This is that outrageous to me. The fact that we keep having to be the people who are screaming and carrying on about it. It just, I don't understand it. Is it because people don't understand what's happening because you're running around saying the word arbitration every 2 seconds, as opposed to there's no such thing. It's called a committee of evidence. It's a justice action taken against Scientologists by using Scientology technology. I mean, I don't know what is it that people can do to help the victims of Scientology who are being forced into these ridiculous, I don't even know, religious torture. I don't know what to call it. It's so traumatizing to the victims of these crimes in Scientology. I don't know what to say to offer any comfort anymore to these people.
Yeah, it's just been a devastating couple of years in court.
But what can people do? I mean, I'm sure there's people out there listening who can help, who can do something. I mean, who do we need to engage here?
Well, there's a new sheriff in town. And, you know, 4 years ago, we actually had some thoughts that perhaps the new administration might be interested in doing something, and that nothing ever came of that.
Right.
When has the federal government dug into Scientology? In 1963 with the FDA,
right.
In 1977 with the FBI, and in 2009 with the FBI. In all those three cases, there was a Democrat in the White House. So I don't know. Does that mean with a new Democrat in the White House, is there an opportunity now for the federal government to do something? I don't know yet. It's too early.
Right.
But, I just feel like these individual lawsuits, individual lawsuits on their own were never going to, disrupt Miscavige too much.
Right.
But they're just they're not even getting out of the gate now. Scientology's it's swatting them away. It's really going to take government action. And I'm sure you do too. I keep hearing about government agencies that are interested and are sniffing around, but when is somebody going to pull the trigger? I just don't know.
But Mike, are there lawyers out there who should be interested in these stories, who should be helping these victims? Or is it professors? Is it, you know, individuals? I mean, is there anybody who should, is it organizations who claim to be advocates for victims? I mean, who can help? What type of people can help here?
A billionaire would be good that could afford to hire lawyers that charge $1,000 an hour, because that's right. What all the good ones are.
Right.
That's where all the good lawyers are. This is right. The problem, or a big problem, with the civil court system in the United States. He who has the most money hires the best lawyers, and the best lawyers.
Let me just point out something. Lately in civil court, things have been disappointing. However, to answer your question, Leah, one of the best things that can happen is for a well-known celebrity to come out and speak out about Scientology. And the fact that you have done that, you completely changed the field. You have completely and utterly changed Scientology watching forever. You have brought in a whole new audience of people. You have raised the visibility of Scientology's abuses in amazing ways. So I don't, you know, I totally get frustrated by what's going on in court too, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that it's you have made a huge impact and things are very different today because of it.
I concur with you 100%, Tony. And I also concur, and I say this often, ultimately, the solution to this is going to be when the appropriate government agencies decide to act. And how did they decide to act?
Yes.
By two things. One, pressure from public opinion and the media. Two, pressure from elected officials who are in a position on the Budget Oversight Committee, or, you know, they're the boss of the IRS, or they're the boss of the FBI, or whatever. Mm-hmm. That is when you ultimately get to all of this is going to be put to bed. And I believe that changing the public perception of Scientology is a necessary step to getting to that point. Only when you get to that point do you really start seeing people willing to act. And I have great faith, or great hope, at this point, just as you said, Tony, a new administration, there is a new opportunity. That's the best I will put it. I'm not sure that a Democratic administration is better than a Republican one. It's just new. So there's a new chance. There are new potential avenues to reach people who may be in positions to do something about it. And I will keep working on that as hard and as long and until something happens, because in my view, that is the only way ultimately that these abuses are going to be put to an end.
Well said. Anything to add, Tony?
I just wanted to say that in recent months at the underground bunker, TonyOrtega.org, two of the best things we've done recently is when you came to me. All three of us took part in Brian Seymour's series, Scientology Black Ops, which the network down there mysteriously killed at the last minute. And you were very unhappy about that. And that's when you revealed to me that there was an entire chapter of your book, Troublemaker, that you had not included in the book that was published. And it was all about Tom Cruise and some of the things that Brian was going to reveal on his series.
Right.
And you stunned me by giving me that material. And you and I worked together to get that ready for the public to see. And I'm still just blown away that that came out on my website, the missing chapter from Leah Remini's book, Troublemaker. So if people have not seen that yet, it's my pinned tweet, my number one tweet on my Twitter account. Tony Ortega.
I'll add a link to that too, Tony.
Thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate it. And you know, of course, that has been, you know, used as, I don't know, you know, E-like entertainment, you know, fluff bullshit, where, you know, people accuse me of, he can't even sneeze without Leah, you know, and it's like, it has nothing to do with, I think people missed the not many, but I'm just saying a small amount of people missed what the point of that was. And I am so for COVID rules being applied to sets. You know, I'm a mask wearer. I enforce it. I, you know, very much believe in this. And I never want to ever give anybody the idea that it's about that or simply not liking this person, because it's very hard for me to separate out the person from the victim, from the person that he is because of what he believes in, and not only believes in, but also is very much part of the abuse culture of Scientology. Well, listen, Tony, once again, thank you for all that you do and for your continued support of the victims of Scientology. I don't always love you, but we fight just like family does. I've sent you some really nasty emails and texts, as have you. But we remain dedicated to the bigger picture, which is exposing what Scientology is doing to people, and will continue to do if we don't continue to do what we do. So thank you, Tony. Thank you to your readers who also are fighting and doing their part. And thank you all for listening and for caring. Don't forget to go to Tony's blog, to Mike's blog, to the Fair Game Podcast website for all this information. Until next time, thank you. I love you both.
Love you too, Lee. Bye-bye. Bye,
thank
Tony.
Thank you, Leah.
So wait, I don't got to love you from Tony?
I love you, Leah.
Can you say it with, like, can you say it now where I actually believe you? I know you could do it. Men are very good at this. If you could just make me believe you. You don't have to put too much into it. It could be simple.
Love you, Leah.
Oh, okay. Bye, everybody.